Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
Another day, another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, and in a little bit, we'll be joined by Marco Marquez as he's in an all-staff meeting right now. Should be back at least in the next 20 minutes or so. But as always, shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. Also, shout out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, be sure to give them a call. But we do want to open up the show today because we're going to go a little bit on the fly right now. We don't have Facebook Live up and running. We should be able to get that once we hit the first break. But what we are going to do this morning, at least in the opening segment, is to recap what happened over the weekend in Oakland as the Royals took 2 out of 3 from the A's down in the Bay Area. Now they'll head off to Anaheim to take on the Angels to continue their West Coast road trip. But over the weekend, the Royals did take 2 of 3, moved to 23-42 on the season. They also had a 500 record, finished a 500 record over the last 10 games. The first time they've done it all season long, but still that 4-game winning streak has evaded Kansas City through 65 games this season. We'll start with what happened on Friday night, as on Friday the Royals were able to win 5-1. Daniel Lynch was phenomenal through 5 innings, struck out 10, had a lot of swings and misses. They were able to take down Oakland's top starter and Frankie Montas, who, if you can remember back to, was one of the top pitchers that was being coveted in the offseason as a part of a potential trade candidate. Oakland was fire sailing everybody, but they decided to hang on to Frankie Montas, who will be a free agent here in a couple of years, but still very controllable, affordable contract. And the Royals are one of those teams that were interested in Frankie Montas. I'm sure at the deadline, July 31st, the A's will be looking to move him again. But the Royals scored 3 off him in the first 3 innings. Whit Merrifield had 3 hits of his own. Andrew Benintendi had 2. Bobby Witt Jr. had 1. Salvador Perez was 2-for-4. MJ Melendez had a walk, or 2 walks, excuse me, in the RBI, but was 0-for-2. Hunter Dozier was 0-for-4. Kyle Isbell 0-for-3. Michael A. Taylor continued his hot stretch, going 2-for-4, and Nicky Lopez was 1-for-4. As I mentioned, Daniel Lynch was great through 5 innings, allowed only 1 run on 4 hits, walked 2, but struck out a career-high 10 batters. Dylan Coleman came on in the 6th, worked a scoreless inning, only allowed 1 hit, struck out 2, walked 1. Taylor Clark worked an inning in 2/3. It was perfect, no hits, no runs, and 3 strikeouts, no walks as well there. Gabe Spire, 2/3 of an inning, walked 1, didn't strike out anybody, but did not allow a run. And Josh Stallmont closed it out in the end, throwing 2/3 scoreless of an inning, walked only 1, and struck out 1. So the Royals were able to win on Friday night by a score of 5-1 to get their 22nd win of the season. As for Saturday afternoon, the Royals shut out Oakland 2-0 behind a brilliant start by Brad Keller. Keller didn't allow a hit through the first 5 2/3 innings. And I don't think many people knew what was going on. Not many people were paying too close of attention to what Brad Keller was doing because the Royals weren't scoring themselves. But Brad Keller managed to go 7 shutout innings, allowed only 1 run, struck out 6, and walked 3. Jose Kwas went 2/3 of an inning, allowed only 1 hit, no strikeouts, no walks, but kept the lead intact. Scott Barlow got the save, a 4-out save, that is his 8th of the season, an inning in a 3rd, struck out 1, walked none, gave up no hits and no runs. As for the offense, Whit Merrifield was 1-for-4 with an RBI, a walk, and a strikeout. Andrew Benintendi was 1-for-5. Bobby Witt Jr. once again was 1-for-5 with 3 strikeouts. Salvador Perez 0-for-5 with 3 strikeouts. Hunter Dozier 0-for-2 with a walk. Carlos Santana was 1-for-2 with 2 walks. Michael A. Taylor was 1-for-4, no walks, 3 strikeouts. Emmanuel Vera was 0-for-2. Ryan O'Hearn had the go-ahead pinch-hit double in the 7th inning as he was pinch-hitting for Emmanuel Rivera. Had a little bouncer over the first baseman, scored a run, and then later on in the 9th inning, Whit Merrifield drove in Kyle Isbell to make it 2-0, and Scott Barlow was nails. So Brad Keller only got his second win of the season, for that matter. Second win of the season. He is 2-8 with a 4.30 ERA. Cole Irvin got the loss for Oakland. He moved to 2-4 on the season with a 3.14 ERA. And Scott Barlow, who should be one of the hottest trade candidates for the Royals, got his eighth save, as we mentioned, and his ERA is now down to 1.55. As for the frustrating game on Sunday, they were shut out by Oakland 4-0. Brady Singer looked good through the first five innings, battled around some early inning jams, but in the end, the offense couldn't give him anything. And it was a rookie pitcher for Oakland, and Koenig, that had 11-plus ERA coming into this one. Yet, as for Oakland, he was nails. A soft-throwing lefty, which seems to be the kryptonite for this Kansas City offense, at least more so than other pitchers. But going into this game, Jared Koenig had less than 10 innings pitched. If you want to go to his previous starts, his two other starts, he started on June 8th against Atlanta, at Atlanta. He threw four innings, allowed four earned runs on five hits, walked two, struck out three. Against the Boston Red Sox at Fenway, he allowed six earned runs on nine hits in four innings, struck out three, walked two once again. And then against the Royals, earned his first win of the season, his first career big league win, by throwing 5 2/3 scoreless innings, allowed only two hits, struck out nobody, and walked four. Yet the Royals still could not cash in on the big lefty, who threw roughly around 88 to 91 miles an hour. But that seems to always be the kryptonite. Soft-throwing lefties that the Royals don't have much experience against. And the A's bullpen shut it down, used three other pitchers after that. Acevedo pitched for Oakland, Jackson pitched for Oakland, and Mole pitched for Oakland to shut out Kansas City. As for the Royals, Brady Singer, 5 1/3 innings pitched, six hits, three earned runs, four strikeouts, no walks, allowed a home run in the first, but settled down after that. Jose Quas came in with two runners on that were Brady Singer's runners, so he inherited some runners there. Got the first out, but then allowed a three-run home run to Sean Murphy, which pretty much put the game out of reach. Matt Peacock worked the final 2 1/3 innings pitched. He only allowed one hit and struck out one, walked nobody to keep the deficit to at least four. But like we said, the offense couldn't do much yesterday. Only had three hits over the nine innings. Whit Merrifield over three with two walks. Andrew Benintendi was over five. Bobby Witt Jr. over three. Salvador Perez over three. Hunter Dozier 1 for 3. Carlos Santana 0 for 2. MJ Melendez was 2 for 3. Michael A. Taylor 0 for 3. Emmanuel Vera 0 for 2. And Nicky Lopez was 0 for 2 as he pinch hit for Rivera later on in the game. But the Royals do take 2 of 3 from Oakland, back in action tonight against the LA Angels. They'll face a familiar face in Noah Syndergaard, who we all remember pitching for the New York Mets in the 2015 World Series. He'll go up against Chris Bubich, who is 0-4 with an 8.36 ERA. The Angels no longer led by Joe Maddon in this one. And when you look at the Angels, and it's sort of been the same type of pattern every single year, at least following their postseason appearance in 2014. They have a hot April. They're one of the hottest teams in April. Hell, they can carry it over into May. But at the end of the day, they just don't have the pitching to propel them, even with all that star power they have. Mike Trout, the best player in baseball. Shohei Ohtani, top five player in baseball. They had Anthony Rendon. Now he's hurt. And the question remains, can the Anaheim Angels ever get back to a competitive level and get to the postseason and give Mike Trout a chance to win games in the postseason? As crazy as it sounds, I'm starting to have my doubts about this. Because at what point do you look at the Angels and say, okay, what do they need? They have the money. They've brought great players in before, yet they haven't won a postseason game with Mike Trout. They were swept by the Royals in 2014. And though the Angels may be able to handle teams like the Royals in the regular season, at the end of the day, they're still not competing with the top dogs in the American League. Right now, the Angels are 33-36 in the American League West. And it's an American League West that, aside from the Houston Astros, it's not a very strong division. It's really not. Because they have Texas in that division. Texas doesn't have a winning record. They've got the A's in that division. I mean, the Angels are in second place right now in the AL West. They're 33-36. They're not catching Houston. They're 9.5 games back of the Houston Astros. But at the same time, the Angels are a series loss to the Royals, to falling behind Texas in the standings. They're only 3.5 games ahead of the Mariners, who are 10 games under 500. And Oakland, of course, bottoming out at 23-45 with the worst home record in baseball at 8-25. As for the Angels, they don't have a winning record at home at 17-18. On the road, they're 16-18. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. But the Royals, they are 5-5 as well in their last 10 games. But something interesting I found when digging through the standings, the Major League standings through this point in the season, 65 games through, here is a shocking stat that I was able to uncover. And it goes to show just how bad the American League Central is this year and how frustrating it can be as Royals fans that, man, if they were just competitive up to this point, they'd give themselves a fighting chance. A fighting chance. But the Royals fell out of it a month and a half ago. They were completely out of it. But here's the American League Central. The Twins are in first place at 30-30. The Cleveland Guardians are in second place, a game back of Minnesota at 34-28. The overwhelming favorite to win the American League Central, the Chicago White Sox, they are 31-33, 5 games back of the Minnesota Twins. The Detroit Tigers, who went out and spent a good chunk of money in the offseason, they're in fourth place at 26-40, 11 games back, and bottoming out the American League Central is your boys in blue, the Kansas City Royals, at 23-42, 13.5 games back of the Minnesota Twins, just 2.5 games back for fourth place in the American League Central. But here is the interesting part of this all. The Royals are nearly 20 games under 500, and they are 13 games back of the Minnesota Twins. In the American League East, the Boston Red Sox are 5 games over 500. They are further from first place than the Kansas City Royals in the American League Central. You want to know how loaded the American League East is? The New York Yankees have the league's best record at 49-17. They are 29-7 at home. They are 20-10 away from Yankee Stadium. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They would have won yesterday if it wasn't for blowing an 8-3 lead to Toronto at the Rogers Center. Toronto's in second place at 38-28, 11 games back. 10 games over 500, they're 11 games back of the Bronx Bombers. In third place is the Tampa Bay Rays at 36-30, 13 games back of the New York Yankees. As we mentioned, Boston, 36-31, 13.5 games back of the Yankees. And in last place, who we all thought wouldn't be competitive, but they have been, especially in such a tough division, it's the Baltimore Orioles. The Orioles are the worst team in the American League East. They are 20 games back of first place. They are 30-38. They have 30 wins this season. They are in last place, 20 games back of the New York Yankees. The Baltimore Orioles have more wins than the Miami Marlins, the Washington Nationals, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Chicago Cubs, the Cincinnati Reds. They have the same amount of wins as the Rockies. In the American League, they have more wins than the Detroit Tigers, the Kansas City Royals, the Seattle Mariners, and the Oakland A's. It's a lot of teams I just listed off, yet it's good for last place, 20 games back of the front-running New York Yankees. The American League East is going to represent the American League in the World Series this year. I don't think there's any way around it. I was high on Toronto going into this. As much as I hate to say it, it's hard to argue against the New York Yankees at this point because the Yankees are a team that they've had the star power for years, but now it's all coming together. And it's been 13 years since the Yankees have last won a World Series pennant. And we've only known in our lifetime the Yankees being a dominant force in the American League. Now they're really showing just how dominant they can be. Nobody, and I mean nobody from the American League Central, is making it past the divisional round. I don't care if Minnesota wins. I don't care if Cleveland wins. I don't care if Chicago wins. They're not making it past anybody in the ALDS. Houston's much better than anybody. The Yankees are much better than anybody. Toronto's much better than anybody. And Tampa Bay's much better than anybody. I could see three teams from the American League East going to the postseason. And quite frankly, I don't want to see any American League Central team going far in the postseason. They're not that exciting. I thought at one point the White Sox would be an exciting team. They're a disaster this season. An absolute disaster. Tony La Russa clearly was given a golden nugget. He is in the, not even the passenger seat, he's in the driver's seat of a Lamborghini. And the White Sox are two games under 500. Yes, they've battled injuries, but that's baseball. Man, I mean, you looked around their lineup. Yasmani Grandal spent a lot of money to bring him in to be your catcher. Jose Abreu at first base was competing for Silver Slugger awards long before the White Sox were even good. At second base, you have, well, you traded away Nick Madrigal. You put Josh Harrison there a little bit. Danny Mendick has played a little bit. Leury Garcia has played there a little bit. At shortstop, you have Tim Anderson, who very well could win a batting title if he can stay healthy. Yoan Moncada at third base. You know, Gavin Sheets is your DH. Luis Robert in center. You know, Andrew Vaughn, one of the younger, the better hitting rookies last season. Still one of the better young hitting players in baseball. And then you're bringing back Eloy Jimenez soon. I mean, the White Sox battle injuries and they have this window in baseball that is never open forever. But boy, have they not capitalized on much. They really haven't. Since they've been a competitive bunch, and I think you can take it back to 2020, the COVID season, the White Sox have won one postseason game. Going into this season, the Chicago White Sox were one of the favorites in the American League, and I think some people out there would have picked them to represent the American League in the World Series. That was before we saw how good the New York Yankees could be, how quickly Toronto can turn around things, how Minnesota spent a lot of money the last minute in the offseason that has put them in first place. Cleveland, who I'll admit, I had Cleveland in last place in the American League Central this year. I didn't think they had enough, I guess, offensive power. You know, I didn't think Jose Ramirez would have this good of a season. Their pitching's been great, but it's always great. Their bullpen, it doesn't matter who Cleveland has in the bullpen, they're always going to be good. But I thought at least the White Sox would be better than those two teams. I thought the White Sox would win 100-plus games and win the division by six or seven games. I didn't think anybody would come close. Now, there's still time. The White Sox are going to go on a run at some point this season. I think that's pretty obvious to everybody watching baseball. Because Minnesota is too inconsistent. Like the White Sox, they get banged up a lot. Minnesota doesn't have the pitching. Cleveland has the pitching. They don't really have the offense to, I guess, hold off Chicago forever. Maybe they do have the pitching to hold off Chicago forever, or at least this season. But you know the White Sox are due for a second-half surge. It's a matter of when that surge happens. Will it happen in August, late August, September? Is it going to happen next week? Not sure. The White Sox have played better of late. They're 5-5 over the last 10, but Cleveland's been the best team in the Central over the last 10, 8-2. Detroit's been the worst in the last 10, 3-7. And the Royals, as we mentioned, they're playing better over their last 10, but how much do you want to take from that, and how much do you want to be optimistic about what the Royals have done in their last 10 games? You know, away from Kauffman Stadium, they're 11-21. At Kauffman Stadium, they're not much better. 12-21 this season. And yet we sit here and watch the Royals and say, okay, what do we want? At the end of the season, on Sports Saturday, I was talking with Blake Schneider's producer over at 810, about what do we want with the Kansas City Royals to finish out this season. What can you hope for in Kansas City? You know, you want a high draft pick, but it's the lottery type of pick. It's just like the NBA this next year. So if the Royals have the worst record in baseball, yeah, you'll have more ping pong balls in the raffling machine. Doesn't mean you'll get the number one overall pick. So it'd be hard-pressed to root for the Royals to have the worst record in baseball this year, and I don't think they will. I think Oakland's probably barreling towards the worst record in baseball. I think the Royals will have a better second half than they have had in the first half. You see the pitching's getting a little bit better with some young guys. not thanks to Cal Eldred, just I think young guys showing that their talent can get a lot of batters out. Brady Singer has showed that. Daniel Lynch showed that. It was against a bad lineup, but you'll take good pitching from young prospects anytime you can. As for the hitting, I think the Royals are going to wait until the July 31st deadline to start calling up some of their top prospects. That means at the July 31st deadline, you're hoping the Royals trade away Michael A. Taylor, Andrew Benintendi, Carlos Santana, Scott Barlow, Josh Staumont, Zach Greinke. You hope they unload, because that clears up a lot of space at the big league level. And if they don't, you have to question just what type of direction the Royals will have. What direction can the Royals have if they're hanging on to guys like Michael A. Taylor, who've been great, but keeping a good Michael A. Taylor in Kansas City for the next year or two, it does you no good. It only blocks guys that should be at the major league level. Hunter Dozier, Carlos Santana, guys taking at-bats from Vinny Pasquantino, who now is past that 500 plate appearances between AA and AAA that J.J. Piccolo mentioned, that he wants to see 500 at-bats at the minor league level. Well, Vinny Pasquantino has that. And we can't keep lying to ourselves and say, well, it's the 500 plate appearances. What's going on? Why is he not called up? The Royals, they're going to say that baseline of where he needs to be, but the Royals won't make a move till the deadline. They want to clear out space at the major league level, so they're not cutting anybody, and they want to get value. Now, what's holding them from trading guys right now? I don't know. You tell me. You tell me why you shouldn't be trading Michael A. Taylor at his peak value right now. I think a lot of teams would be calling for Michael A. Taylor. Hell, Scott Barlow's been nails this year. If you hang on to Scott Barlow, I mean, having a closer on a bad baseball team just doesn't make too much sense. So a lot of guys on this team, you can have value in. Andrew Benintendi, another guy. But it's also punting on the idea that the Royals will be competitive next year, which I don't know if the Royals are willing to do. But it's year five of rebuild. And with that rebuild, you still need to keep generating a lot of talent through the minor league system. If you want to build this thing from within, it comes from trading away guys that are already on your major league roster. If you're hesitant to sign guys through free agency, you want prospects, here's how you do it. You don't need to wait till the July 31st deadline. We all know the Royals will, but here's where you can get value. And know you're playing better of late. It does you no good to play better now and finish with 70 wins than it does to play poorly and maybe have a learning experience for the younger guys in your system. Vinny Pasquantino, Michael Massey, maybe you want to call up some pitching, and Drew Parrish, Angel Zerpa. I mean, there's a lot of guys that can break through on the major league roster. It's just a matter of who will they clear room for to give those guys space at the major league level. All right, we've been talking long enough. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll be talking some Chiefs football, as now we're about a month away, a little over a month away from training camp at St. Joe. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside me, myself, and I. I do want to give a proper shout-out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout-out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. So we didn't mention we're going to talk some Chiefs football, at least here in the second half of the show. And you're probably wondering, what can you talk about at this point for the Kansas City Chiefs? Just finished up minicamp. We've gone over the running back room. We've talked about this wide receiver group. We've talked about this draft class. We've talked about the defensive line. We've talked about the secondary. Who the hell can you talk about right now for the Kansas City Chiefs? Now, I found this interesting article that came out from CBS. This is from Jeff Kerr, of CBS.com. And the title of his article is Why Patrick Mahomes Could Be Headed for a Huge Year. Here's what is different about the Chiefs quarterback's offseason plan. Now, I'll read you a little excerpt from this article. And this is from Jeff Kerr once again. He said, though last season was a good one for Mahomes, it wasn't the typical one expected from him. It was the first season Mahomes didn't finish with a passer rating over 100, and he finished with the lowest passer yards per game and with 284.6 and most interceptions, 13, in a season. Mahomes got off to a slow start in 2021, throwing 10 interceptions in his first 8 weeks and having a 94.5 passer rating as the Kansas City Chiefs stumbled to a 4-4 beginning. The Chiefs quarterback was coming off an offseason rehabbing from surgery on his toe, something he didn't have to worry about this year. And sometimes we want to take into account, you know, that offseason surgeries, they all go over smoothly, right? You hear they have a successful surgery, they're feeling good, and they shall be fine 100%, right? We always think that. And not to say that the surgery didn't go well for Patrick Mahomes, I'm sure it did, but it's still rehabbing from that toe. And I think for that offseason, instead of Mahomes worrying about, okay, we just lost the Super Bowl, now I can go to this offseason and train the entire time. No limits. I can start working out, go 100%, lift weights, do agility training, be throwing passes to Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, whoever would show up, DeMarcus Robinson, Byron Pringle, whoever would show up to the workouts. No limits. Right? You have no restrictions here. But yet, after surgery, Mahomes had to take it easy a little bit. He had to ease into his offseason routine, something maybe he wasn't used to in his career, especially not with a turf toe type of injury. And there's some gruesome injuries that NFL players have to rehab from. Torn ACLs, broken legs, broken hands, broken wrists. No, it takes time to rehab those type of things. An Achilles tendon tear. It takes time to rehab from those type of injuries. And a turf toe injury doesn't really shock you as, I guess, gruesome. But it's nagging. If you've had turf toe before, you know how much it limits you and how tough it can be to sort of heal from that. I mean, Mahomes, when he had that turf toe injury, I mean, you could tell he was limping a lot going back to the huddle. I mean, it's not excruciating pain. It's nagging pain, though, and it's pain that hurts. And though you can take a shot and numb it up and try to get you through football, it wears off, and it doesn't always feel comfortable. And now this offseason, following the loss to Cincinnati, you have to imagine there's been no restrictions to Patrick Mahomes' offseason. It's been able to hit his offseason routine from start and now all the way to training camp. And you hope, again, everybody stays healthy going into training camp. But this is why maybe we can expect the type of season that many maybe are riding off Mahomes on having. I mean, you want to say that, you know, Kansas City has the best roster, maybe the best quarterback, and I can get on board the best quarterback. I don't know if they'll have the best roster in the NFL this year. I think you can allude to Buffalo for that or the Chargers for that. Doesn't mean they'll be the better team. But with Patrick Mahomes, a guy that, as we just mentioned, right, the shocking thing to me, or maybe the most reassuring, the most comforting thing, is that we consider Mahomes' last season to be the worst of his career. How many times has the Chiefs quarterback in the worst season of their career had an interception or had 13 interceptions total for the entire year? 284.6 passing yards per game. That was a season low, a career low, that is. I mean, Mahomes is just a different type of athlete. He's a different type of quarterback. And why maybe we can expect Mahomes to have a type of year that maybe is the best of his career? It's going to be tough to top those numbers in 2018. Because simply that roster was the best he ever had. Now it was the worst defense he ever had. But Patrick Mahomes had Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, both younger at that point. He had Kareem Hunt. He had a strong offensive line. The only thing he's lacking now is Tyreek Hill. He doesn't have Tyreek Hill anymore. But what they did was replace Tyreek Hill with three wide receivers who can maybe equal up to that type of production, if not more. We know Juju Smith-Schuster, the talent he has. We know MVS played with Aaron Rodgers, his drop percentage. It's low. He catches a lot of passes. He's got strong hands. Same with Sky Moore. And you have Travis Kelce back. and you bring an undrafted free agent like Justin Ross. You bring back Josh Gordon. You have Mecole Hardman. The fact that I waited that long to mention Mecole Hardman tells you that this offense is still stacked. It's still loaded and still primed to give Patrick Mahomes an MVP type of season. And you know what? It's when the critics, it's when the media writes you off that you have the best chance of winning the MVP. When Patrick Mahomes won MVP, nobody saw it coming. You thought first year as a starter. You know, can he really get to that level? Oh, yeah, he can. And he showed that 50 touchdowns, 5,000-plus passing yards. It was a ridiculous type of year for a first-year starter. And it's what gave Patrick Mahomes the stardom he has today. And then he wins a Super Bowl in year two. And now the MVP favorite this year is Josh Allen. And you know what? With that being Josh Allen, you don't really want to, I guess, give too much credit because Josh Allen still hasn't gotten to the level where Patrick Mahomes is. Everybody wants to anoint him being better than Patrick Mahomes. Well, he's 0-2 in the postseason against Mahomes. He's 1-3 all-time against Mahomes. And yet, one of Allen's best seasons, statistically, would be one of Patrick Mahomes' worst seasons, statistically. Similar type of quarterbacks in arm strength. Allen's a better runner, and he's got the more loaded roster this year. But when everybody points to you and says, you're the MVP favorite, it's tough to live up to those expectations. Aaron Rodgers won it last year. Yeah, he was the reigning MVP candidate, but I think most people at that point had maybe written off Aaron Rodgers, saying, well, he can't do it again. He has that drama with COVID right now. People are turning against him. He has that, you know, still knock of not being able to perform in the postseason hanging over his head. And it didn't turn out well last year. He lost to San Francisco in the divisional round, at home, in the snow, at Lambeau. But when you doubt a guy like Mahomes, it only opens up the door of opportunity for him to do something really special. And I think when you look at Patrick Mahomes, he's bound to do something very, very special this upcoming season. And for that matter, when you doubt a team like Kansas City, and Kansas City was doubted last season. They were doubted when they started 4-4. They were doubted when they started, or they were, they were doubted early on in the season. They were doubted when they were 4-4. Then they went on that run. They won, what was it, 9 in a row, 8 in a row, nearly 10 in a row before blowing that game in Cincinnati. I mean, Kansas City very well could have run the table. They could have run the table for the rest of the season and given themselves an excellent chance to run through the postseason. Now, what happened was, well, they just didn't have the, I guess, the second-half firepower to beat a team like Cincinnati. But at the end of the day, how much can you really, I guess, count on a team year in, year out to get back to the Super Bowl? But now there's that motivation. We thought there was a chip on the shoulder for Mahomes after losing the Super Bowl, and I think he did. I think that team had a chip on their shoulder. I think you just caught Cincinnati on the wrong day, and you weren't 100% focused for all four quarters. But when you have that type of fuel and you have that, I guess, you don't want to use underdog mentality, but it's also what New England did for years. When you started to doubt New England, they would use any form of doubt to fuel them. Every time they'd say the Tom Brady era is over, they use it to fuel them. And when you can use fuel like that, it doesn't matter. It's your locker room. Whether it's true or not, whether you are an underdog or not, it is incredibly difficult to, I guess, not use that bulletin board material. And I think the bulletin board material for Kansas City starts with what's going on this offseason. They're not favored to win the AFC West. They're not favored to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. Their quarterback isn't favored to win the MVP. All these are stacking up to have to set up a very surprising year for the Chiefs, and more surprising than what we're used to. You know, we can always pencil in Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs to win 11, 12 games. Who's to say a team without Tyreek Hill can do more than that? Now, I'm not holding it to this team to win 14 games, but would it shock me? Would it shock me if they won 13? No, they're well coached. They have the best quarterback in the league. They've got weapons still. They have the best tight end in the league. And they've got a defense that is younger, more physical, and more athletic. Now, it's the schedule that gets in the way of that, and you may think it's a really tough schedule, but more primetime games, more opportunities for Patrick Mahomes to show just how good he really can be. And when you can be that good against that type of a schedule, you get the recognition that people can't really deny. You get the props that people can't deny. You get put on a pedestal and people can't really refute it. As much as we dislike Tom Brady, or if you do like Tom Brady, I'm not going to hold you against it, but you can't argue that Tom Brady time and time again has gone up against critics and performed well. Mahomes is still early into his career, but for the most part, he's silenced a lot of critics and people that have doubted him said, oh, we've seen the regression of Patrick Mahomes. Is it done for Mahomes? This is what we all expected from him coming out of college. I mean, come on. Last year, if that's the worst season Mahomes had in his career, then you're having a legitimate, unanimous Hall of Famer in Canton years from now. I mean, Mahomes is that type of special. He's a quarterback we may never see again in Kansas City. You're hoping you get a reincarnation of Patrick Mahomes. But the type of player he is, I mean, last season, we want to talk about having a down year. Yeah, quarterback rating under 100. He had nearly 5,000 passing yards, 37 touchdowns, 13 picks. And when you can say that he doubled his interception total from 2020, that's ridiculous. 38 touchdowns, 6 picks, once again, nearly 5,000 passing yards in 2020. 2019, his lowest season in passing yards, in touchdowns, but also had only 5 picks. His passer rating was 105.3, 26 touchdowns, 5 picks, 4,031 yards passing. Then that ridiculous 2018 year, 50 touchdowns, 12 picks, passer rating, a best 113.8, and 5,097 passing yards. Just ridiculous numbers. And is it crazy to say that he can top that? Is it crazy to say that Mahomes can have an even better year? Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see to find out here. We'll have to wait and see if Patrick Mahomes really can get to that level of being better than the 2018 version of Patrick Mahomes. All right, when we come back here, we're going to finish up with some fact or fiction, but also give you some headlines that have happened over the last weekend. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN, Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, now alongside Marco Marquez. We've switched seats. And to be honest, I'm happy that he's back because for the last 5 minutes of the show, or last 10-ish minutes of the show, we're about to do some headlines. We'll also be able to do some fact or fiction, which I was hoping Marco would be back in time for. Now, we did mention with some of the headlines and stuff that has been going on, at least over the weekend, here is what is going on in the sports world. If you are big into the Super Regionals, Arkansas thumped Stanford in their first round of the College World Series 17-2. Notre Dame also advanced. Ole Miss advanced over Auburn. Oklahoma beat A&M 13-8 in game one of their series. Notre Dame beat Texas pretty handily, and then A&M beat Texas, eliminating Texas from the College World Series. Ole Miss, as we mentioned, was able to beat Auburn by a score of 5-1. In that elimination game, of course, A&M dominated the Texas Longhorns, a little rivalry going on there in the tournament. It was good to see A&M and Texas to play once again. As for last night with Notre Dame and Oklahoma, what a fantastic game that was. And even some controversy early on. There was a weird play at third base where the ball hit the third base coach and runner thought he was out. I think that was still very early on, low scoring part of that game. But a lot of weird things happened in that game between Notre Dame and Oklahoma. But in the end, it was Oklahoma winning by a score of 6-2. And now the Sooners are 2-0 after taking down A&M and then, of course, Notre Dame, who took down the king of college baseball earlier in the regional round, or the Super Regionals, excuse me, against the Tennessee Volunteers. As for tonight, if you're still into watching some college baseball, Arkansas will be taking on Ole Miss. And I want to say the late game, as soon as I can pull it up here, of what's left in the college baseball bracket. I know that Ole Miss and Arkansas will play, two SEC opponents, and played, and are very familiar, for that matter, before facing each other in the College World Series. But it should be, I want to say, The elimination game should be tonight. Stanford should be playing. I want to say Oklahoma advanced. Notre Dame and A&M will play with a chance to go on and play Oklahoma. So Notre Dame could have a rematch with Oklahoma. Arkansas and Ole Miss play tonight at 6 p.m. At 1 p.m. this afternoon, that's what I thought. Stanford and Auburn will be playing in the elimination game. If they go on, the winner of that game will go on to play the loser of Arkansas and Ole Miss. And then, of course, game 12 would be on Wednesday at 6 p.m. on ESPN. And that would be the loser bracket. So still a long ways to go. The World Series finals wouldn't take place till Saturday. That would be game one. Right now, the only team with the upper hand is Oklahoma, being 2-0. Arkansas will have to be the other team I would expect to be the favorite to be another team ahead of everybody else at 2-0. They'll take on Ole Miss. But after them thrashing Stanford 17-2, you feel like Arkansas has the best chance to not only get past Ole Miss, not only get past Stanford or Auburn once again, but you get back to the College World Series final. Now, on the other side of the bracket, Oklahoma's more of the sleeper. Oklahoma wasn't supposed to be at A&M. Oklahoma wasn't supposed to be Notre Dame. Texas wasn't supposed to be eliminated as early as they are. A&M now making their crawl back, and they're in the elimination game against Notre Dame. We'll see if Oklahoma will have a rematch with Notre Dame or a rematch with A&M. As for bracket number two, I like Arkansas tonight against Ole Miss. I think they have more offensive firepower. They've been pitching much better. They can't throw Connor Nolan tonight, but I'd expect them to throw one of their younger guys, maybe Jackson Wiggins. Ole Miss, though they pitched very well against Auburn, not sure they've faced an offense like Arkansas in a very long time. And for that Stanford-Auburn game, man, I'm scarred by what I saw from Stanford. I maybe like Auburn in this one. Stanford was terrible against Arkansas, and they've already used their ace, who had struggled all the way through the postseason with Stanford. So I'll take Auburn to move on this afternoon, and I'll take Arkansas to win later on tonight. So that is the headlines in college baseball, at least. The NBA draft is on Thursday, correct, Marco?
If it is, it snuck up on me.
I feel like the NBA draft is on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm
Thursday, June 23rd.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure
you're
right.
Okay, so it is June 23rd. They came out with a mock draft, at least Yahoo Sports did. Ochai Agbaji is going 14th to the Cavaliers, at least in this mock draft. Ooh. And Christian Brown going in the second round, actually, 32nd overall, the first pick of the second round, to the Orlando Magic. So if you're into NBA draft, if you're into seeing where your players, maybe you're a KU fan, end up in the draft, be sure to tune in on Thursday, as it will be the 2022 NBA draft. Jabari Smith is expected to go first overall out of Auburn. If you remember Jabari Smith. Chet Holmgren's supposed to go number two. I definitely take the career of Jabari Smith way, way over Chet Holmgren's career, because I think Chet Holmgren right now is mocked to the Oklahoma City Thunder. First in the draft, I want to say, is going to be... Who am I blanking on right here? Who is first overall in the draft? I know the Thunder.
Oh, you're talking about who's picking first overall.
Yeah, is it Houston?
No, it is the Orlando Magic again.
It's Magic. Okay, so Magic could end up with Jabari Smith and Christian Brown. That would be quite a haul in the first two rounds for the Orlando Magic. But again, that will take place on Thursday, June 23rd. All right, to wrap up the show, we're going to finish up with some fact or fiction. Five questions, five takes under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, fact or fiction, the Royals finish ahead of the Tigers in the Central.
No, I'm not going to be too optimistic on that. I think fiction. I think the Royals will finish in last place in the American League Central this year.
Fact or fiction, Drew Parrish makes a start for the Royals this season.
He's one of my favorite pitching prospects right now for Kansas City. Asa Lacy's just been too hurt, and Drew Parrish has done nothing but deal since being in the Royals organization. Was dominant in Double-A, has looked just fine in Triple-A, at least from what I've seen so far. I just think the Royals will look at Drew Parrish and say, well, if we're going to hold guys like Vinny Pasquantino, down, we need them to get reps. I think they'll want more innings for Drew Parrish in AAA. So I'm going to go fiction. I don't think he makes a start this year, but next year I'd expect him to.
Fact or fiction, Mahomes wins MVP.
Oh, I was really pumping it up that he would win MVP. I don't think he needs to cement any sort of legacy or for the Chiefs to be really good. Of course, if he is the MVP, the Chiefs will be very good, and I think they're already going to be good this year. But I think Josh Allen's due. I think Josh Allen is due, and this Buffalo Bills team is going to be very, very good. I'm going to go fiction. I don't think he wins it this year, but he'll come in at least the top three voting.
Yeah, fact or fiction, the Chiefs play the Bills again in the postseason.
It's going to make a great storyline. I just hope if they do play, this is just kind of maybe the sports fan in me. It'd be fun to see them play at Orchard Park.
I'd like to see the Chiefs go on the road, and man, if you could beat Buffalo in Buffalo, that'd be quite a story, because you know Buffalo, that is their demon right now. It's Kansas City. They can't get past the Chiefs, but I'm going to go that that's too much to ask for. I'm going to go fiction. I don't think 3 years in a row will it be the Chiefs and Bills in the postseason.
And lastly, the Yankees win the World Series and in five games or less.
They are very dominant right now, but I think that even the most dominant teams, they don't always just run through the postseason. The Red Sox did it in 2018. The Dodgers did it in the COVID season. I don't know, the Yankees seem to be cursed, at least in the last decade plus, in the postseason. I'm going to go fiction. They don't win the World Series. I think they get to the World Series. I don't think they win, though. I think they'll play the Dodgers, and I'll have the Dodgers winning the World Series this season. Well, there's Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.